Hi, and welcome. This is the second round of Lightning Talks, which are quick 5-minute talks. We are going to go through all of the talks first, and then at the end, we will take questions for any of the talk speakers. So first off, we are going to start with Jiri Vlasic, who will be speaking about Divide and Map, which is a project to help mappers divide a big area into smaller squares.
Hi, my name is Jiri Vlasic, and I will talk about Divide and Map now, the Demon project. If you have a large area you would like to map, usually you divide it up to smaller squares and let mappers map, and you are done. If this sounds familiar, then you probably know what tasking manager. Personally, I don't like it much. They use proprietary software, they don't listen to community, and still they have performance issues. What would be the better solution? Divide up functionality. That would support multiple clients. It would increase the developers and communication efficiency, and it would make the thing simpler. I would be concrete. There is running instance of the daemon project, its server. There is web client for mappers. There are two clients for managers, the JSON plugin and deployment guide. Because you don't need to be a developer to run your own instance. And because I am very forgetful, there is a step-by-step guide how to run a particular tasks for deploy the daemon project. I did a load testing for currently running instance, and the result is that there is no error for 100 people on Mapathon. So the daemon project. Keep mapping, guys.
Live.
Next, we have Harrison Cole, who will speak about mapping historically Black colleges and universities, which are, for those of you who are not familiar, are a group of schools in the United States that were established specifically for Black Americans. Historically, these institutions have not been as well mapped in OSM as they're predominantly white. The institutions are predominantly white. And there is an effort to...
Hi, my name is Harrison Cole. I'm a PhD candidate at Penn State University. I'll be talking about mapping historically Black colleges and universities in OpenStreetMap, as well as giving you some information for if you want to contribute to this work as well. So HBCUs, as they're also called, are schools that were established prior to 1964 when the Civil Rights Act was passed. Before that, most universities in the U.S. had admissions policies that barred people of color from being enrolled. So these schools were established in response to that. A lot of them are still around. They only comprise about 10% of the total number of institutions, universities in the U.S., but 25% of Black Americans who graduated college did so through an HBCU. So they're a pretty important part of our social infrastructure. That being said, the U.S. has historically systemically neglected primarily Black spaces, whether they're residential areas or commercial areas, and HBCUs aren't immune to that. It extends to being mapped as well. So most of them are in the South, a few in the Midwest, but that's primarily where they're located geographically. The spreadsheet on the right that you can see, this was created, it has a list of HBCUs in the US. This is pretty broadly defined depending on who you talk to. A list of HBCUs might only include those that are still accredited or only are funded through a particular grant program. But this list was deliberately defined very broadly because we wanted to make sure that all schools were accounted for, or at least as many as possible. It also includes information about the extent to which each campus is mapped. It could be anywhere from being micromapped. It has all the sidewalks and pathways and parking lots and everything, all the way down to just being a label. Maybe it has the outline of the university grounds. As an example, this is Grambling State University. As you can see, there's the track, a few labels for like the gym and dining hall, but that's kind of it. After a few days, this is what it looked like. There's most of the main buildings have been mapped, not all of them. Parking has been included, a lot of the amenities. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on a lot of these campuses. A couple more examples. This is Kentucky State University. This is actually after a couple of people have been working on it. So a lot of the buildings that you can see here weren't there previously. This is after a day or two of work. This is Miles College, same thing. Almost nothing here is mapped. You have the main building near the northernmost part of the campus, but it's kind of it. Now we have the sidewalks, pathways, buildings that aren't obviously part of the campus, but legally still are, have been mapped as well. So where do we go from here? This is a great start, but HBCUs need to be involved in those projects. As far as I know right now, there isn't anybody doing this work who is directly connected to an HBCU. I could be wrong, but I'm not aware of it. So we need to make sure that they're involved in this process as much as possible. And of course, continue working. There's still a whole lot of stuff that needs to be mapped. A lot of micro mapping still needs to be done, where certain like statue locations are, trees, bike share stations, things like that. And then afterwards, or simultaneously, tribal colleges, universities, Hispanic serving institutions, these are all places that also need to be mapped. Similarly seem to have been neglected relative to other larger universities in the US. So if you want to contribute to this, this is the URL that you can visit, tiny.cc/HBCUOSM. That's the spreadsheet that I mentioned earlier. It has a list of all the HBCUs in the US, and you can just pick one and start mapping. That'll be it for me. Thanks.
Live.
And next up, we have Jose Montes with DDD123OSM, which is a tool set for generating 3D models from OpenStreetMap data.
Well, hello, welcome to this talk, DDD OpenStreetMap 2D and 3D Render Toolchain. I hope you are all doing well and enjoying it. My name is Jose Juan Montes. I'm a software engineer from Galicia, Spain, and the developer of the tool I'm introducing today. I've been recently working on a tool that generates 3D models from OpenStreetMap data, and I'd like to share some of the results and the status with you. I was building this tool for our game, Your City Racing, which is what you can see now on the screen. This is an adventure racing game which will allow players to drive around cities based from OpenStreetMap data. We plan to build several European and American cities initially, and in the future we'd like to allow players to choose any location they like. We plan to make your city racing available for Linux, Windows and Mac, so if you like the idea, please follow us on Twitter and help us spread the news. Back to the story. A few months ago, I was working on a hobby project, a tool which simplified the task of programming procedurally generated 3D scenes. And I meant to use this to generate very simple 3D scenes for games like this one. This was one of the first scenes produced as a proof of concept for a simple, basic golf game. So you can, for instance, grab a CSV of the periodic table and quickly program the generation of a 3D scene like this one. So this experience allowed me to quickly prototype a generation pipeline for OpenStreetMap data. And this is what I came up with. And fast forward a few months, and today this toolset looks like this. At the bottom of the stack, we have this 2D, 3D generation tool called the DDD. And it's a Python package built on top of well-known libraries such as NumPy, Shapely, and TriMesh, among others. So, what can we do with it? We try to be quite representative at ground level. So this includes generating sidewalks with curves, irregular ground and park areas, having some model variety, trying to align objects like benches, sensibly represent traffic signs, traffic lights, business signs, urban props. So currently all the stuff is procedurally generated, which means that we can support tags like surface materials, height or width for stuff like trees, lamps or benches. We also aim to create correctly snap geometry, including tunnels and bridges, so they can be effectively used, for example, in the context of a physics simulation. We can easily style different elements in both 2D and 3D stages, so this allows DDD to output vector or raster files with the 2D representation along different stages, as you can see here. You can then inspect the generated files. DDD aims to maintain full OpenStreetMap to 3D traceability. So for every object, way or piece of geometry, we can see the metadata, OSM ID, OSM tags, and also generation process data, or debugging for process. And I'd like to show you a couple of examples of customizations to the pipeline that have been written with just the first one is the integration of orthophotos, using them as textures laid on the surface area. And they are dynamically retrieved from a WMS service, and in this case they are used to replace floor textures. And the next one is mapillary integration. Here we add a couple of steps. Here we have a few examples of the vector output process with Inkscape. Okay, so wrapping up, this is the current list of features of the DDD OpenStreetMap pipeline. So what is this today? The software is not quite mature enough, and the API is not fully consistent, so it's expected to change. But I think that this tool and the paradigm may be useful in areas like infographics, civil engineering, architecture, games and simulators, artificial intelligence. So let me know what you think. I do not currently have a Patreon page, but I do plan to look for patrons or parties interested in sponsoring this development and the related services. Anyhow, if I wish to be able to, as soon as possible, publish a basic online viewer service that allows people to navigate at least a set of predefined areas. And in the end, I'd like to see an infrastructure with global coverage. Following your City Game Twitter account or buying the game when it comes out also helps. That's all. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope you liked it.
Live.
So next up, we have Enoch Seth Nyamador, who will be speaking about the Open Source Geospatial Foundation, OSGEO, and their projects that are working with OSM data.
Hello and welcome to this quick lightning talk on OSGEO and OSM. My name is Enoch Seth Nyamador, and I'm with the OSGEO Marketing Committee and an OpenStreetMap contributor for the past years from Ghana. Now, this presentation is to get you up to speed about OSGEO and how it's connected to OpenStreetMap, and how OSM community is also connected to OSGEO. So OSGEO simply is the Open Source Geospatial Foundation, which believes and promotes free open self-organizing, and it's a global community as well. Now, OSGEO was started way back in 2006. OSM was in existence in 2004, and then it's a community and driven by the need to organize and then navigate rapidly around the growing field of open source geospatial projects. Founding members included GDAL, MapServer, QGIS, GRASS, and PostGIS. This is the initial logo of OSGEO. Some OSGEO projects, friends and family. Now, OSGEO projects love OSM data, is no doubt, and it's a fact. And GDAL, which is one of the libraries that is used in both commercial and open source software such as QGIS and many others, has out of the box support for OSM data with PBF, OSM files, and etc. Open layers and Leaflet has OSM support. OSM based services use this. Such as Basemap, and for example, it's MapBender, which uses OSM as a base map, and then PG Routing, which makes massive use of OSM data for its analysis and then for its process. Now, OSM users also love OSGEO projects, which is interesting, and most of our OSM data that we get into OpenStreetMap is reused in QGIS. And many other variety of OSGEO projects for analysis. OSGEO membership is open, free, and is over 5,600 members registered on the wiki. This might not reflect the right number of actual membership down to, this cannot be compared to OSM's membership, that is registration. There from the statistics is quite old, from 2019, might be more than this now. And OSGEO has charter members, which elects a board of directors, and these chartered members are to become a chartered member, you community member have served, done something which is worth mentioning, and the charter members also nominate you as well. There are local chapters, over 30 plus around the world, and globally these chapters organize regional conferences for GE CodeSprint, and also contribute to other projects as well. Local chapters, how are they connected to OSM? In Germany, Force4G's EV is the local chapter for OSGEO, and the official local chapter for OSMF in Germany as well, telling you that Force4G's and OSM is a good combination, but there are different, maybe different interests, but it's the same OSGEO OSM combination. So Force4G, which is a conference that is free on open source software for geospatial conference that takes place annually, originally is a both combination of OSM and OSGEO. At this conference you meet a developer, talk about new feature in software X, Y, and Z, and also talk about use cases. Often most Force4G is about Force4G tools, you're using OSGEO OSM data for a use case as well, and then these regional conferences are also about OSU and OSM. So it's beyond software, open source, open data, open standards, open science. And we signed MOOSE, that is a memorandum of understanding. Started way back in 2011, and we signed by ICA and then other institutions as well. Youth Mappers, forming part of the OpenStreetMap community, and many more. Yeah, you might ask, why doesn't OSM sign the MOU? Yeah, OSM, in OSM, we don't do signing of memorandum of understandings. And so OSM falls within the category of like-minded organizations. And then we are friends already, and we promote and use same tools, and we love each other's projects. Yeah, where's your life, which is a full-blown Linux distribution based on Ubuntu, is contains OSM data for wherever Fort4G is going to take place for the next release. And you try it, it has a lot of tons of open source tools, QGs, and it's good, interesting. Try it. Yeah, OSU and OSM is a great combination. And let the force be with you. Enjoy State of the Map 2020. Thank you.
And next up, we have Willie Marcel, who will be giving us a tour of the latest version of Tasking Manager, Tasking Manager 4, which was just released in April.
Hello, I'm Willie. I am a developer working for HOT, the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team. And today, I will do a little tour on the Tasking Manager 4. The Task Manager 4 was released on April this year with a completely new interface and a lot of changes on the API to make Task Manager perform faster. Here we have the list of projects, and each project has a card with some information, and we can also interact with the map and filter here the project list. We have some possibilities of other filters, like filter by campaigns, by organizations, or by locations. Here we have the project overview page with a completely new map that shows each task with a different color for each status. We have some information about the project, like the elements that needs to be mapped, and some stats about the project. We have the project description, the organization that is coordinating it, the permissions, comments, list of contributors, and the timeline. Clicking on the contribute button will redirect us to that page where we have the instructions on how to map the project, and also the same map with a legend showing what means each color on the map. So we have a task list that allows us to interact with the tasks. We can do that interaction both clicking on the map or selecting the tasks on the task list. One new thing is that you can select multiple tasks for validation by just clicking on the blue map, on the blue tasks. So another new thing that we have is that we can use the ID editor inside the task manager, so you don't need to go out to the OpenStreetMap website to map or validate a project. So here on the ID editor integrated with on task manager, you can map as you would do it on the OpenStreetMap website. So let's map here a new building, and tag is just building. So let's save that edit. And after I save it and select if the task is completely mapped or not, I can submit it. In that case, I could not map everything, so I would say no and submit the task. So update the status of the task and showing more some new features that we have here on the My Starts page. We can see some statistics about the contributions of that user on Task Manager, like the number of hours spent, the number of elements mapped, a timeline, some other stats, and some information about the location of the projects that the user has contributed. We have a lot of changes as well on how we manage the projects. We have added the teams and organizations that makes it possible to a group of users manage a project and also handle better the permissions with creating teams for the users and associating it to the project. So I invite you to make a try on mapping on Task Manager and help us map for people in need.
And next up, we have uses of mapping to assist community care during the COVID-19 situation in the Philippines, presented by Andy Tabinas.
This is how mental health in the Philippines looks like, according to the latest available data, which was from way back in 2016. And this is how the current COVID-19 situation here looks like. The World Health Organization and public health governments and services around the world are acting to contain the COVID-19 outbreak. However, this time of crisis is generating stress throughout the population. In any epidemic, it is common for individuals to feel stressed and worried. And as the coronavirus pandemic has swept across the world, it has induced and still induces a considerable degree of fear, worry, and stress in the population at large. These are normal responses to our perceived real threats or when we are faced with uncertainty or the unknown. So with COVID-19, the main psychological impact to date is elevated rates of stress and anxiety.
I'm Andy Tabinas, a geospatial scientist and civil servant here in the Philippines, and I'm here to share with you how our volunteer organization, which is one of the hot OSM micrograntees for 2020, was able to utilize maps and OSM data to provide community care during the pandemic here in the Philippines.
We have been in community quarantine since mid-March, and although restrictions to movements have been a bit eased now, movements are still limited and most of us are still physically distant from friends and family. As advocates for mental health, we know it is important to do our part in reminding everyone to look after our mental health as much as our physical health. So, together with other groups and individuals, we organized online activities and shared information aimed to provide community care during the pandemic. How did we do it and how significant are maps and OSM data in doing so? But first, what is community care? Committing to being there for others and intentionally showing compassion. Community care is like the whole of society approach, so whilst there need to be focused interventions with specific objectives and target groups, mental health and psychosocial support needs a whole of society approach, and this is where community care comes in. A whole of society approach requires addressing the mental health and psychosocial support needs of the entire affected population, regardless of their affiliation, race, gender, or age. But as mere volunteers and citizens at home, we had to do our part to support others. So for mental health awareness, we developed mapping platforms that could encourage people to share their stories and be there for others who would need someone to listen to them to fight their mental health battle. We made Here Here in mapping emotions and we used OpenStreetMap data as base maps for these maps. So for here, people could add a pin to the location near to show where the nearest help is. And same with mapping emotions, they could add a pin to share their locations to show people that mental health occupies space. And we also use these platforms to help students gain access to online learning, because we know that not everyone can afford internet nowadays, but most of the classes are done online because of the pandemic. So we did a contest that encouraged students to share their stories via here and mapping emotions, and we selected the best entries, and the winners received mobile loads that they may use for mobile data to join their online classes. We also emphasized coordination and shared knowledge and expertise through collaboration with other groups. So we recently had a mapathon and workshop, which encouraged everyone to take care of their mental health and stay socially connected despite being physically distant from each other. And we have these other programs, so collaborations with other groups, contests, and social media campaigns to promote mental health awareness. And of course, to support our goal in mental health awareness, to map mental health services in the Philippines, to support the need for to map existing mental health and psychosocial support during this pandemic, we did mapathons and workshops that encourage mental health volunteers to add data to our list of mental health services and resources, which are separated per region, and then map these services if they know their location on OpenStreetMap via our platform on MapContrib. So yeah, that's how we use the mapping and OSM data for mental health awareness. Thank you.
Stand by. Live.
And next up, we have John Bryant, who is going to talk about extracts, specifically of Pacific Island countries from OSM data.
I want to tell you about a small project I recently completed, developing a resource for GIS users and map makers in the Pacific Islands, with the aim of exposing more people in this region to OpenStreetMap and hopefully helping the local OSM community to grow. I'm not a resident of the Pacific Islands. I live in Australia. I grew up on Vancouver Island in Canada, which is technically an island in the Pacific. But when we talk about Pacific Islands in Oceania, what we usually mean is the Pacific Island countries and territories in the vast region between Eastern Asia, Australia, New Zealand, and Hawaii. So I'm not necessarily qualified to speak with any authority about issues facing mapmakers in this region. But over the last 2.5 years, I've been involved with organizing Phosphor G State of the Map Oceania, and I've made a few friends in Pacific Island countries. Last November, I was fortunate enough to participate in the Phosphor G State of the Map Oceania conference in New Zealand and the Pacific GIS and Remote Sensing conference in Fiji, and I had the chance to listen to the stories of Pacific GIS users. Some of the stories were about the problems mapmakers face in this huge, extremely remote, and economically challenged region. Problems like limited budgets, limited opportunities for technical learning, and the difficulty of finding good data. In light of these difficulties, it's not surprising to find that people are very interested in open geospatial software and data. There's already some OSM community action in the Pacific, for example, in French Polynesia, where a very active group of people is engaged in community mapping projects. And certainly, many of the GIS people I've spoken to in the Pacific are interested in or curious about the project. But generally speaking, the OSM community is very small in the Pacific, and usage is quite low. So, if it's so useful, why isn't it getting used more? One possible reason is, maybe Pacific mappers are used to a more GIS-centric workflow. If so, the question this project aims to address is, some people are accustomed to a GIS paradigm. What if there were a Pacific-focused data resource that made it easier for them to start using OSM data? I've spent much of my career as a GIS user and mapmaker, downloading datasets based on themes like buildings, roads, and waterways, and using them as layers to build maps. When I first encountered OSM extracts, I found them hard to use because I had to filter and symbolize them using an unfamiliar tag schema, which can be difficult to adjust to if you're used to a different way of working. We thought maybe we could create a simple system that would do some of the preliminary work with filtering and symbolizing, and provide GIS users with something in a more familiar format. We hope this project will help mapmakers over the initial hurdle of working with OSM data, so they can discover not only how richly detailed it is, but also where the gaps are, and maybe inspire some of them to become OSM editors and fill the gaps. It could provide a catalyst for people to join, or start, their own local OSM community, and develop tagging guidelines that are relevant to their own lives, and potentially emerge as members of the global OSM community, enriching the project with their unique perspectives. So how does it work? Technically, it's a fairly simple project, using a scripted workflow to fetch and process extracts from GeoFabric and land polygons from FOSGIS, resulting in a set of user-friendly data resources. The project generates bundles of resources, automatically updated on a weekly basis. There's a bundle for each of 14 countries, plus one for the region, with small file sizes for low-bandwidth environments. Each bundle contains a geo package with thematic data layers familiar to traditional desktop GIS users, a QGIS project and layer file with some basic cartography, and documentation about OpenStreetMap, how to use the data, and how to edit OSM. The data is updated every week, and the latest data is available here. For the whole region, the Pacific Environment Portal. For each country as a single bundle, 14 country-specific data portals. The project is being launched in the coming days, and we're eager to find out if it helps increase the use of OSM in the Pacific. We'd love for you to check it out and let us know what you think. Thank you very much.
And live.
And next, for those of you who were at State of the Map last year, you might have seen the presentation about the Hiker app, augmented reality app for hikers. Now Nick Whiteleg is back with hiker.js.
Hi, my name is Nick Whiteleg, and I am a lecturer at Solent University in Southampton in the south of the UK. I'm also a long-term OpenStreetMap contributor, and I'm here today to talk about Hiker.js, bringing Hiker, which is my augmented reality app, to the web. So a bit of background. Well, Hiker is an Android-based augmented reality app for walkers and hikers. And what it does, and you'll see some screenshots in a moment, is it overlays OpenStreetMap data on the camera feed of your phone, so you can use that to help you navigate in the countryside, because it will show you the footpaths, the hiking trails, and where they go. And furthermore, as you'll also see in a minute, it shows virtual signposts and virtual notice boards on the camera feed. And I actually did talk about this last year at State of the Map in Heidelberg, and also at FOSDEM in 2019 as well. Okay, so just some screenshots of the Hiker Android app. You can see four screenshots here. So The two left screenshots were taken climbing the highest peak in Northern Ireland, and you can see that the OpenStreetMap data is there in orange and green, and you can also see these virtual signposts pointing the way to nearby points of interest. On the right hand side, what you've got is a screenshot taken in the local park, and it's showing you a virtual notice board. Now, these virtual notice boards can be added by users, and it's telling you to be aware of the blue-green algae in the lake around 80 meters ahead of you. We did have that problem last summer. And you can also see there's a real footpath there, that sort of concrete path, and you can see the OpenStreetMap way is overlaid there in green. And then the bottom right, that is in the local national park, the New Forest, and it's showing you the routing functionality of HiCar, and it's routing you to the nearby town of Brockenhurst. So the sort of yellow colour is the route that it's calculated. And again, you can see in the distance there a virtual signpost. Okay, so allowing me to port HiCar to the web, I'm making use of a library called AR.js. So AR.js is an exciting project to bring AR to the web, making use of HTML and JavaScript. It was started by a guy called Jérôme Etienne and has recently been led by another developer, Niccolò Carbagnoli. And it's essentially 3.js and A-frame based. So as you may well know, 3.js and A-frame are standard APIs for doing 3D web development. So web development with 3D graphics. And they both essentially wrap WebGL. So the recent developments in AR.js from late last year. So AR.js was originally a marker-based AR library, but recently location-based functionality has been added to it. So AR.js 3 now supports location-based AR as well as marker-based AR. And that makes it very exciting and very useful for HiCar. A great thing about AR.js is it has a very active community and a lot of contemporary interest. And here you can see, here is its GitHub repository, which you can take a look at right down there. Okay, so it seems to me, a very likely way forward is actually to port HiCar to the web, making use of AR.js. So currently HiCar works on Android only, which is a bit of a limitation because there's no support for iOS or indeed any other mobile platforms. Also, as I've just said, AR on Android, away from the AR core official effort, which is quite heavyweight and cloud-based. There's not much development going on in terms of independent, purely open source projects on Android. AR.js is very different, as I've said, very active community. And if I port HiCar to AR.js, it means there's already this community which could attract new contributors to the HiCar project. Okay, so what is the progress so far? Well, there is a working demo actually available on the web at hicar.org/webapp. This will only work in Europe and the non-European parts of Turkey, so the whole of Turkey. And the reason why that is that my server only hosts OpenStreetMap data in those areas, Europe and the whole of Turkey. However, if there is a lot of interest, I can add other small areas on request. So the working demo is equivalent to HiCar 0.1 in functionality. In other words, it does show OSM OpenStreetMap ways, with different colours for roads and footpaths, but the functionality for virtual signposts and virtual notice boards is not yet present. I would strongly recommend that you use Chrome if you're testing it out, as there are some quirks in Firefox that is actually a known issue with AR.js as a whole. So what are the future plans? Well, the obvious future plan really is to make the HiCar web app equivalent in functionality to the Android app. In other words, to add signposts and virtual notice boards and also routing to a final destination. Now, because web development is such a ubiquitous thing, and there are lots of people involved in web-based projects, that will actually be significantly easier to add than for the Android, for the native Android app, because there is a library available, GeoJSON Pathfinder, which actually does Dijkstra-based routing, and not just routing, but also graph generation using GeoJSON. So my own web API already provides OpenStreetMap data in GeoJSON, so I can convert that to a graph and then use GeoJSON Pathfinder to do the routing. And again, there is the GitHub repo for that. And One of my future plans for HiCar, which I've already mentioned in previous talks, is to use computer vision for better placement of the road, the footpaths and the trails. And there is, I do feel that because there is a strong AR.js community anyway, that's likely to lead to developments in this direction across AR.js as a whole. Okay, so thanks for that. So any questions, my email is there, and that is, I've also provided the GitHub repository for the web version of HiCar. Okay, thanks.
And now, finally, we have Amitha Biju with a talk on Mapathon Kerala, which is being coordinated by the Kerala State IT Mission.
Hi, I'm Amitha K. Biju, an undergraduate civil engineering student from Kerala, India. Today, I'm here to share my experience on OSM and OSM as a project in my state. I'm an NSS volunteer. Most of them don't know what is NSS. NSS is a national service scheme which was initiated by our government to promote volunteerism among our students and youth. Mrs. Srirak V, the officer of NSS of our college, he conducted a workshop based on OSM, and through him only I understand the basic concept of OSM. But I couldn't continue my work because of the unavailability of resources like laptop or computer. We only plotted some major parts of our college. It's on October 2019. But after the pandemic was widespread and the lockdown was declared, our NSS team decided to restart the OSM project as a program for our NSS. So we make a team of 25 to 30, likely many people who likes mapping, and we start to map as a team. After that, it becomes interesting, like that we compete ourselves, and it also become a personal interest as a way to kill my tedious days. And I'm also excited for developing a new skill for me, which may get collaborated with my civil engineering profession. And after that, all the NSS groups among the state, they start to make a group for the mapping, and they start to map from April onwards. Then the coordination team of the Mapathon Kerala, they contacted me and informed me that I'm in leading position among the NSS volunteer community. So I'm getting excited. Then only I know that all these NSS activities are undertaken as the part of a larger program by the Kerala IT Mission, that with the motto, Namukundaka Namada Bhubadam, or let us make our map. I'm getting super excited. All these initiatives of the Kerala IT Mission came across due to a series of natural calamities from 2017 onwards. We have Oki, the cyclone in 2017. We have flood in 2018 and 19. And now we have COVID. During the 2018-19 times, our Kerala or the state is immersed in water for 4 to 5 days. That is a pulse situation. More than 600 were died, more than 35,000 of them were evacuated, and many of them lost their livelihood. This event was brought a realization that climate change mitigations and also that rethinking the development model is one of the important steps for Kerala future development. The important step to mitigate the disaster is having a proper spatial data information and also having a planned system based on the spatial data. So this requires a lot of data generation. Here comes the importance of or the foundation of Mapathon Kerala. Mapathon Kerala, it was launched by the Chief Minister in October 2019, and it was coordinated by the Kerala State IT Mission with the concept of let us make our map. This using this, the project involves mainly crowdsourcing, and they are using the adoption of crowdsource with the government, and they use and generate open data. They are also mobilizing local community and making a partnership with citizen and state. During the COVID, the Mapathon attracted more than 2,000 volunteers or 2,000 mappers, and we plot more than 220,000 of buildings, 18,540 kilometers of street network, more than 8,000 kilometers of road network, and more than 27,500 of assets. This is one of the biggest achievements that the OSM or the Mapathon have. Now also, the Kerala IT Mission contact us or mentors all the volunteers, including me, and they teach us the new tools like JOSM because they want to share this knowledge to everyone and make a larger MAPA community. So I'm so convinced that my small deeds can make huge difference in the society, especially in the most challenged phase situation in humanity now, that is the climate change. So I'm happy that I'm a part of OSM, I'm a part of Mapathon Kerala. Thank you.
And now we will move on to the Q&A. So if you are in our Hackpad, you will see that some of our speakers are in there and have been answering questions. A question for Divide and Map by Jury. The question was, why did you pick Postgres instead of MySQL? And the answer was due to the Postgres PostGIS extension, because a lot can be done just by the query. For DDD123 OSM, there's been added some information about how to get involved with that project. There will perhaps be in the future an online map, but global coverage is pretty far on the roadmap. With respect to Hot Tasking Manager 4, somebody asked, do users need to allow third-party cookies? And the response is, it is optional to allow cookies. The data from the cookies is used only to provide Hot with statistics about the usage of the tools. And they use their own analytics instance, so no data is shared with third parties, but you can turn that off if you want. For HiCar, the question is if there is a F-Droid version planned. And answer is the native Android app could go on F-Droid, but the talk is related to a browser-based app. And then there is some further discussion about specific issues that people are encountering in testing that out. So if you have questions for our speakers, I know that with the Lightning Talks, we have speakers from all parts of the world. So many of them are probably not awake right now. You can post your question in the Hackpad, and the speakers hopefully will be able to respond in the document. And thank you for joining us, everyone. We're now going to a meal break, and we will return in 1 hour.